Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Deborah Becker. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen said today the nation's banking system is sound and the White House will ensure that American bank deposits are safe. It's just the latest development in a week that's been roiled by news of what to do about banking failures. Members of the Massachusetts congressional delegation have had a central role in the debate about banking this week. Senator Elizabeth Warren's introduced a bill that would repeal a rollback of some banking regulations.
We experienced the second largest bank failure in our nation's history. And make no mistake, this failure was the direct result of leaders in Washington weakening financial rules.
Another member of the delegation, Congressman Seth Moulton, supports that, and he joins us to talk about this. Welcome, Congressman.
Good to hear you, Deborah. How are you?
I'm okay. How are you?
Good, thank you.
Good, good. So these concerns that we've been hearing this week come after Silicon Valley Bank and Signature Bank closures. Tell me why you think that new banking legislation is needed and what it would do.
Well, first of all, I voted against the deregulation of banks like Silicon Valley Bank in 2018. Mm-hmm. So I've introduced a bill called the Stabilizing Vulnerable Banks Act, which is quite similar to the bill that Elizabeth Warren has introduced in the Senate, to simply restore those regulations, the regulations that were in place that kept our banking system safe until the Republicans and a good number of Democrats as well voted to repeal them a few years ago.
Mm-hmm. And of course, you know, I just want to bring this up because it was interesting to me to hear from former Massachusetts Congressman Barney Frank, right, who was obviously of the Dodd-Frank legislation
right.
that regulated banks. And he is a member of Signature Bank, which was one of the recent closures. And he spoke with NPR earlier this week, and he was asked about whether this rollback of regulations was the problem. And this is what he said.
I was on the board of Signature, and I can tell you personally, there was no diminution of regulation. I think the cause of this problem was crypto. And it starts, if you notice, with FTX.
Of course, there he's talking about the failure of the crypto company FTX, but he blames it on really, at least in the case of Signature, going into crypto, and it's not really this rollback of regulation. What would you say to that?
Well, first of all, the bank that started this all was Silicon Valley Bank, mm-hmm. and that doesn't have much exposure to crypto. That wasn't the mistake that they made. They mismanaged their assets. They invested in a whole bunch of government bonds that went down in value. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, look, I have a lot of respect for Congressman Frank, and frankly, we wouldn't have this legislation to make the overall banking system much safer without his leadership. But in this case, what he's saying is he's defending Signature Bank. That doesn't really have that much to do with what happened to Silicon Valley Bank, which started this whole run.
I see what you're... But he does, I mean, in the interview, just to be fair, he did say that it isn't necessarily... He didn't think that the rollback of regulations were really the main factor here. But I'd like to just move on a little bit, because there are some who say that, you know, as you said, these banks did not manage risk properly. So what's the federal government's role then? Should the federal government be even bailing these banks out?
Well, I don't think we should bail out the owners of the banks. I don't think we should bail out the stockholders who frankly should lose their shirts over this. Mm. But depositors who are counting on making payroll or, you know, just having their retirement savings intact, they're the ones that the government has decided to bail out. And I think it was the right decision, because if the Biden administration had not stepped in and done that, we would have seen a much larger run on a lot of banks the same size as Silicon Valley Bank, and that could have turned into an economic catastrophe. Mm-hmm. But it is important to make this distinction. This is not the bailout of the entire bank and its owners, its executives, the way we did back in 2008. This is a much more targeted bailout of just the people and the small companies who have made deposits into the bank and expect to get their cash back.
And the Justice Department is now investigating the owners and their actions, especially at Silicon Valley Bank, leading up to its closure. So that may be a separate issue. But I'm also wondering what's come up in all of this is interest rate hikes. And should there continue to be interest rate hikes, which the government is trying to do to because of inflation, but which is cited as a reason why Silicon Valley Bank at least it contributed to Silicon Valley Bank's difficulties. Do you think that there should be a pause on interest rate hikes because of this, or is there any message there about interest rate hikes?
I mean, first of all, this is a terribly pathetic excuse. Everybody in the world knows that interest rates are going up. So if the managers of Silicon Valley Bank's assets weren't paying attention and are now blaming their mistakes on a wider economic trend that everybody knows is happening, I mean, that's really pathetic. Right. It's a really poor excuse. So the Fed has a very good reason for raising interest rates. We know why they're doing that, to combat inflation, which is another problem that we all know Americans are dealing with. In fact, the whole world is dealing with inflation right now. So unfortunately, what's happening here is you have some people playing politics with this, trying to blame the Biden administration for mistakes that were made by the bank itself. It's interesting that on the Friday or Saturday when this news broke, you heard Republicans actually saying, where were the government regulators paying attention to Silicon Valley Bank? They were actually saying that there should have been more regulation. And of course, then they remembered that they had voted against it a few years ago. Mm-hmm. So the Biden administration is handling this well. They've got professionals like Janet Yellen who have a lot of experience and know what to do, and they're not playing politics with it. They're just doing what they need to do to keep our financial system on track and keep Americans' deposits safe. But you got to see through the noise from Republicans and others who are just trying to make excuses here.
Is there more that needs to be done to make sure that bank management acts responsibly, aside from rolling back regulations so a larger bank wouldn't be able to, would have more scrutiny? I mean, is there something more that needs to be done here, do you think?
Well, the reality is that regulations exist not for the purpose of having regulations, but because they're needed to keep companies in line. And we may have to introduce more regulations because clearly these companies couldn't handle their own assets, something that should be a simple expectation of that anybody would have of a bank. But that will be much debated in Congress, I'm sure. Right. You know, I mean, in a perfect world, we wouldn't have any regulations. It would just be totally free, right? I've always remembered that phrase that Harvard Law School uses when it confers degrees. I, by the way, do not have a law degree. But the phrase is to learn those wise restraints that keep us free. The right regulations are wise restraints that actually enable the freedom of the financial system, the banking system, and all the rest of us to live in a vibrant economy where people are treated fairly. That's what we need.
Let's talk about some other legislation that you've brought forward recently. We're gonna pivot here. This bill would provide Black World War II veterans and their descendants with GI benefits. And I think at first listen, some folks might be thinking, "What do you mean? Didn't World War II vets, regardless of race, get GI benefits?" You say no. Tell us what happened.
So you're right that that's the way the law was passed. And back in the early 1940s, this was a big fight in Congress to make sure that it applied equally to all veterans of World War II, regardless of background or skin color. But then what happened is it was up to local VA administrators to actually give the veterans these benefits. And many of them were racist. And so an awful lot of Black veterans and their families didn't get the core promises of the GI Bill, an opportunity to go to college and an opportunity to buy a home, which of course are the two most common ways to build wealth in this country, access to education and housing. And today, as a result, the average net worth of a Black family is about 1/10 that of a white family. So this didn't just affect the veterans themselves. This injustice has affected their descendants too. Mm-hmm. And so we're simply trying to restore that and go back and just get these veterans and their families the benefits that they earned and that they deserved.
So what it would entail then would be education benefits and mortgage benefits for those descendants of World War II vets. Is that right?
That's exactly right, because we all know that you're much more likely to go to college if your parents went to college. You're much more likely to own a home if your parents owned a home. And so that's why this is relevant to today. I get the fact that, you know, I'm a proud Marine Corps veteran. I'm a proud beneficiary of the GI Bill. I can confidently say, Deborah, I would not be in Congress today if not for the benefits of the GI Bill. And I recognize that my generation of veterans, is not responsible for this injustice, but we absolutely have the opportunity to set it right. And that's what we're trying to do.
Any idea of what that might cost? Has there been any sort of estimate?
I mean, look, there have been some estimates. It's going to be several billion dollars for sure. But when you look at that price tag and you say, wow, that sounds pretty steep, look, that's just a measurement of the injustice, right? And that's the injustice that we absolutely should fix. The GI Bill itself has been considered one of the most successful pieces of legislation ever passed, because for every dollar that the GI Bill cost the American taxpayer, it's returned over $7 in benefits. You're making investments in people. And so I'm confident that if we make the investment to fix this injustice, we'll see a great return, just as with the original GI Bill.
There's been a lot of debate about reparations after slavery. I just wonder, what do you say to folks who say, well, is this reparations? Is there a connection here?
Look, I think that's an important debate to have. But this isn't reparations as people classically think about it. This is just fixing an injustice. This is just getting veterans the benefits that they deserve. I have veterans come into my office all the time who are not getting properly cared for by the VA, or they're owed a pension and they're not receiving it. And just like we investigate those cases and help them get the payments that they have earned and deserve, we're trying to do that for all the Black veterans and their families that were denied these many years ago. Mm-hmm.
And do you think that there is that we have the resources to sort of adequately track everything that's happened since then and make sure that this could be, sounds like it could be a big bureaucracy, Congressman. Do we have the resources to do that?
We just talked about what's the appropriate amount of regulation, right?
Right.
no, look, it's a good question. And yes, I'm confident that we can do it. It turns out that when we started looking into this issue, which I have to say, I'd never heard about this specific injustice. We all know that there's been a lot of racism, even systemic racism in America. But I wasn't aware of this specific injustice until a Marine on my team brought it to my attention. But we do have a lot of facts about how bad it was. Let me just give you one. In 1947, so a couple years after the war, in the New York and northern New Jersey suburbs, right around New York City, in that one year, 1947, 67,000 mortgages were issued by the Veterans Administration. Out of 67,000 mortgages, fewer than 100 went to non-white veterans.
Wow. Yeah, that's remarkable. Well, those are remarkable statistics. And largely this was because the way the GI Bill was implemented was through the states. And so the states could basically be discriminatory and because the federal government wasn't involved and there wasn't blanket regulation, back to regulation.
Well, no, that's right. I mean, I'm a patient of the VA. I made a promise when I got elected to continue going to the VA for my healthcare, like my fellow Marine vets. And although the VA administration in Washington technically oversees the whole system, as a practical matter, I just deal with the people in Bedford, the people at the local VA in Bedford. And that's exactly the way it's been for veterans for generations.
All right, Massachusetts Congressman Seth Moulton, who represents the 6th District, thanks as always for being with us.
Great to be here. Thank you.